I wasn't very far away.
I'd like to call Hess Committee to order at 10 after 2. We have President Senators Dyson and Senator Calgary and Betty Davis here. We're sorry we're late starting today, but several of my members were in finance meeting. And we didn't have a quorum, but they're on their way. Okay, what we're going to do is take up a resolution that we heard last week, SJR 18, Child Product Safety. You want to come forward? Actually, you presented the bill before. You just want to give us a little overview of it again.
Okay.
It's my intent to pass it out.
Hi, my name is Kat Pustay. I'm staff to Senator Wilkowski. And our resolution today is SJR 18. It calls on the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission, or the CSPC, to test the materials used in toys and child products for hazardous chemicals like lead. Over $15 billion worth of toys and children's products were imported to the United States in 2006, and almost $10 billion worth from China alone in 2007. Over half of toy and child product recalls in 2007 were due to lead or chemical poisoning hazards. The CSPC is an independent federal regulatory agency created by the 1972 Consumer Product Safety Act. It conducts tests to determine if a toy presents a choking, aspiration, or ingestion hazard, but relies on toy and child product manufacturers to self-regulate the materials used and thus toxicity levels in their products. In essence, the CSPC checks for choking hazards, but not the effects of sucking on a pacifier for many hours a day. Children's bodies and brains are developing and much more susceptible to hazardous impacts from chemicals than adults, so we should do what we can to limit their exposure. As many busy parents know, Alaskan parents rely on regulatory agencies to help ensure the safety of their children and rely on information that they give. So we ask that the legislature urge the Consumer Product Safety Commission to increase safety testing on toys and children's products. As Kristen Ryan from DEC said last week, the U.S. Senate passed the Consumer Product Modernization Act at the beginning of March. So this resolution really supports that legislation in Congress, saying that Alaskans want more protections for their kids. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions or comment on this resolution?
You ready for a motion?
Just as soon as I recognize that we do have Senator Elton present, and I would entertain a motion at this time to move this out. We heard it last week already. And if someone want to make a motion, I'd accept it.
I'd make a motion that we move SGR
18.
18 on to the next committee of referral with individual recommendation.
Are you sure that's right? Is it 18 in the number?
Uh-huh. Oh, mine says 11.
I saw that on the speakers. They made a mistake on it, but the bill is 18. It's SJR 18, same one we were at last Monday.
You pass yours out and I'll pass mine.
You got to be careful. That's old folks. We're confused by those things.
Is there any objection to it? No objections. No need to call the roll, and it would go to rules. It has no other referral. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
We do now have Senator Thomas, so we have all members present.
Sorry for my tardiness.
That's quite all right. Glad you could make it. Thank you. The next bill that we're going to go to is 107. Naturopath bill. And actually, you do have the CS that was done, and I'll have time to run through what the changes are. Did no more than what we discussed at the last meeting to establish a board.
Okay.
Which one are we on? Sorry.
We're on 107.
107.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members of the Hess Committee, Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. What you should have before you is a committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 107. This is the L version, as in Lima. It's 25LS0702/L. It's an act relating to naturopaths and to the practice of naturopathy, establishing an Alaska Naturopathic Board and providing for an effective date. You'll notice that the bill itself, in the first section, identifies an addition to the boards under Title 8.45, number 13 on page 2, line 10, includes the Alaska Naturopathic Board. There's a new section, 8.4503, section 3, creates the board, and consisting of 7 members appointed by the governor. 3 shall be naturopaths licensed under this chapter who have been engaged in the practice for at least 5 years immediately preceding appointment, including at least one that lives outside the 3rd Judicial District. 1 member shall be a licensed pharmacist. Another would be a licensed physician. 2 members would be public members who, in addition to limitations imposed under the title, may not have direct financial interest in the healthcare industry other than as consumers of healthcare services. This board, you'll notice, has is designated in that section with a chair and a secretary. They'll serve staggered terms of 3 years unless removed for cause. 4 members of the board constitute a quorum for transaction of all business before the board, and the governor may consider licensed naturopaths who have been nominated by the Association of Naturopathic Physicians. It goes on page 3 to the duties of the board, and under that section, it's 8.45005. It establishes a list of prescription drug devices, drugs and medical devices that are consistent with naturopathic education and administered by a naturopath holding a prescription endorsement and review of prescription drugs and medical devices annually by the department. This board is to review allegations of misconduct, approve naturopathic medical programs, adopt regulations necessary to implement this chapter, and conduct hearings on charges of alleged violations. The board, it says in section 4, shall request the department to issue a license to practice naturopathy to an applicant providing proof satisfactory to the board that the applicant has received a degree from an accredited 4-year university and has paid applicable fees. So the board is replacing the department in sections 5 and also, in section 6, they added a new section as to the scope for diagnostic purposes, describes the drug endorsement, and also subject to perform minor surgery under line 27 on page 4, and then it defines. It says that minor surgery on the bottom of page 4 may be performed by a licensed naturopath only if providing proof satisfactory to the board that the naturopath has completed 1,200 hours of training in minor surgery under the supervision of a licensed physician, physician's assistant, or nurse practitioner. The restrictions are on page 5 on the practice, except as authorized. They may prescribe or recommend the prescription drugs. They can only engage in minor surgery, and also not use general or spinal anesthetics. So the whole point of this particular bill was, in this draft, I should say, was to transfer the responsibilities from the Naturopathic Council that we had formally set up to a Naturopathic Board, a formal board that would be responsible for all activities, including licensing and the discipline, as well as their current practices.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on the changes that have been made? Basically, what we've gone from an advisory board to a complete board that could be appointed by the governor, and it's the other changes, there are no other changes in the bill except what he just read off. And it goes on the list with the rest of the Board of Veterinarians, professional counselors, all that group. They'll just be added to that list. Any discussion? Yes, Senator Elton?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm going back to in the new committee substitute on page 4, section 5.
All right.
And I don't recall there being a provision for a temporary license in previous bills. Is my memory just incorrect, Mr. Obermeyer?
I believe you're through the chair. You're correct, Senator Elton. I think this is something that I think had been decided through alleged legal. I am not sure as to the purpose, but it does explain that that is a person who's applied for and is qualified to take the naturopathic exam, offered after the date of application, and provides proof of satisfactory to the board that the applicant has paid fees, meets the requirements. So it may be a temporary process. I'm not exactly sure how that would work, but it gives the board some type of leeway in issuing temporary licenses.
That is what it does, but we have Jean Michelle online, I think. I'd like for her to speak to that. Jean Michelle, are you there?
Yes.
Are you hearing our conversation?
I apologize. I haven't reviewed this bill. You can come back to me in a minute. I'll take a quick look at it. This is a different drafter's bill.
Okay. Oh, this draft was by Mr. Bullard.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. She was out of town. That's right.
I'd be happy to answer the question if you give me a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Can I
yes.
ask your staff, is there a definition for minor surgery?
Through the chair, Senator.
Or if not here, maybe in other statutes?
We did have a definition, and let me look through the minor surgery is defined on page 6. Means the use of operative, electrical, surgical repair, and care incidental to superficial lacerations and abrasions are superficial lesions, and the removal of foreign bodies located in superficial tissues, and antiseptics and local anesthetics in connection with methods authorized under this paragraph.
And it also states on there what it does not include. And that was in the previous language. That's not new. Anyone else have a question while we're waiting? No. While we are waiting, is Mary Minor on there? Mary Minor?
I'm here, Madam Chair.
Were you interested in testifying, or are you just listening to?
I'm listening in, and I'm available to answer questions if I can.
All right, thank you. Well, we'll just at ease for the time being. I don't think there's anybody here to testify on this bill. Is there anybody in the audience that planned to testify on the bill? Because it was not my intention to take testimony, but if someone is here, I'd take it. Come on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the record. My name is Jennifer Strickler. I'm the licensing chief in the Division of Corporations Business Professional Licensing, Department of Commerce. Thank you for this opportunity. I received the L version of the bill a little earlier this morning, and I just have a few notes here for you. First thing is, I'd like to reiterate what I said before about establishing a regulatory board for 44 licensees. I just wanted noted that everybody understands this is going to be a very expensive proposition for the 44 licensees, because all licensing boards or all licensing programs under centralized licensing 0801065 are required to pay their full cost through licensing fees. So for this, establishing a board for 44 licensees will increase, or has a potential to increase, their fees tremendously.
Yeah, I don't know who established that fee or what it is, but they are interested in having a board. It would be their decision to decide if they don't want it. They know that their fees are going to go up. They said that. And if it's more than they want to handle, I guess they will not have a board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One other item in Section 3 on Page 3, item number 2, that's on lines 8 and 9. I've received word from our investigative unit suggesting that those two lines be removed. And the reason for that is, if the board were to review allegations, complaints, etc., and the complaint resulted in disciplinary action, the board would not be able to act as the final decision maker in the case, because the argument could be made that the board is tainted. Current statutes 0801, 087 provides the department with the authority to conduct investigations. Okay, another one, page 3, lines 18 and 19. The investigative unit also suggested this be removed because the provision provided here is already covered in existing 0845060, which is the grounds for suspensions, etc., and also under 0845070, which is the current disciplinary sanctions. And the last item in section 14 on page 7, lines 21 and 22, the last sentence, it says, the board shall specify the term of office of each licensed naturopath and public member appointed subject to this section. That may not be necessary because the terms of office are already spelled out in the lines above that under the transitional provision. And that concludes our comments on the L draft.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Senator Elton?
Madam Chair, this is the question that I was going to ask the attorney, but Jennifer may be the better person. If we go to page 4, section 5, this is the provision for a temporary license. I mean, I guess what I need to understand is, I mean, the way this is worded, the board shall request the department to issue a temporary license. But the way I read that is the board shall request, but the department need not necessarily offer a temporary license. Is my interpretation correct?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, that's a possibility. Routinely in licensing professions, Because the department collects the application packet and put it together, we review, we do the first screen. If it looks like, if we think, feel that they can be licensed and there would be no need for a temporary, we would then go to the board immediately for approval instead of issuing a temporary and then following right after with a permanent license.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would assume that a temporary license might be needed if in fact this is a board that meets twice a year, that a temporary license could be needed for a couple of months then, or?
Through the chair, Representative Senator Elton, yes. However, we also do ask people, we ask boards to review credentials through the mail. They don't have to wait for only two times a year. We try not to hold up people for licensure if they meet the requirements.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, that was the question I was going to ask the attorney. So Jennifer has answered it fine.
Thank you, Jennifer. Michelle, are you still on? Okay, we can go on.
Senator Davis, I am still here, but I'm muted, so I can't answer your question unless you use my name.
All right. The thing is, the question was answered by someone from Commerce.
Yes, I understand that.
Okay. Other than that, I don't need anything at this point. And you're really here for another bill, I think. Any other questions or comment to the CS? You know what we need to do, really. We have not adopted it because this is new to you. Would somebody say that, and then we'll continue our discussion.
Madam Chairman, I move that we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 107 version /L for our working document.
Any objection? Hear none. We'll continue with the discussion. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just one question I have. I see the Alaska State Medical Association still maintains their objection to portions of the bill, and they made a statement at the end of their recent letter of March 19th that says naturopaths are not recognized by Medicare as providers eligible for payment. And I was just curious. I'm assuming that's an accurate statement, but I just wanted to ask maybe someone from the department if that is accurate, or if your staff, Mr. Obermeyer, knows that to be a fact or not, I guess.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, it probably would be better for the department to respond to that, but it was my understanding that that may be correct at this time. However, if they were granted privileges through this bill, they would probably apply for coverage for these additional procedures at that time. So how that works, I am not sure, but I believe you're correct in your in your analysis at this point.
There is a procedure that they would have to go through to see if they qualify for Medicare. This is like when we took on the midwifery, when they came in, was not able to bill through Medicare, but they are in the case, but they are now. Okay. So they got it later after that. If somebody from the department want to speak to that, you may.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer Strickler from Department of Commerce. I'm sorry, I was looking around the room for someone from Health and Social Services because
we do have someone here.
I really don't know the answer to that.
Well, yeah, I didn't mean you. I meant Health and Social Services. I'm sorry. That's not part of yours, I understand. Okay. I think I've done, and along with the committee, and done everything that was asked. And I'm ready for this bill to move out of my committee to the next committee or referral. I don't see anything else. The minor changes that she needed to have made when we get the regular draft, because this is just a working draft, those two items could be deleted from there. And I'd like to pass it out of my committee.
Excuse me. Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you just said about those two items being deleted out of
there. Yeah, the two lines that was given by Jennifer, that she said it was not necessary that they be in there, they could be deleted from the bill.
So have we moved that they be deleted after we adopted the L version?
No, we just adopted, we just discussed it. We didn't say that we would adopt that, but we can. I don't have the writing of it, and somebody would have to repeat what was said if you want to do it here. I thought we could just formally accept it as a conceptual amendment and put it in when we have the drafters do the new bill.
Yeah, and just in case this is ever challenged, I suggest that we do that formally after we've adopted the L version, which I think we've...
Jennifer, would you come back and state the citation again on where you wanted us to delete?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jennifer Strickler, Department of Commerce, Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. The two changes we suggested is on page 3, removal of lines 8 and 9. On page 3, removal of lines 18 and 19. And actually, there's one more, and that's on the last page, page 7, on lines 21, 22, the last sentence.
Through 22. Okay. Thank you very much. Somebody want to put that in form of a motion to delete that, those lines?
I think I can do it.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's see. Understanding that we have adopted the L version.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move a conceptual amendment on page 3, line 8 and 9, remove all the material and renumber appropriately. And line 18 and 19, remove all the material, and I believe that will invoke the or revoke the necessary, the parens 1 in the sentence above. Then on the last page, line 21, remove everything after the period, terms period. And so that you'll remove the line on then the rest of the line. It says the board shall specify the term of office, each licensed naturopath and public, and then line all of line 22.
Yes.
And I don't think that'll require any renumbering.
It doesn't. You have an amendment on the floor. Is there any discussion of that? Here, no discussion. Is there any objection to the amendment that was given? You wanted to speak to you?
No.
No? Okay, then we accept the conceptual amendment that was given by Senator Dyson.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have two questions.
Yes.
What is the next committee of referral? And is there a companion?
I think the next committee of referral would end up being finance. Because it's been in two other committees already, mine and Labor and Commerce.
Secondly, is there a companion bill in the House?
There is a bill on the House side that has been introduced, yes. I don't know exactly at what point it is at this point. But it's had, okay.
Finance, you're right. It is finance.
Oh, yeah. I don't know where that bill is, but it's over there.
All right. Thank you.
It was just introduced just a couple of weeks ago, and it is actually mirroring the bill that we have here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other discussion? I would accept a motion to move Senate Bill 107.
Madam President. I move that CS for Senate Bill 107 / L as amended by the Hess Committee be moved to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations. And I didn't see a new fiscal note. I don't.
This the same one is in there.
Same minute.
With no changes.
With the attached fiscal note.
Thank you. We have a new bill that's going to come before us today. And it is the Children's Trust. I think most everybody that's going to speak to the bill is off net or online. Is there anybody in the audience that want to speak to this bill? I'll just let him go on and give you the overview of it, and we'll take testimony after that.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Tom Obermeyer again for A to Senator Davis. The bill that's before you should be the committee substitute for Senate Bill 206. It's the E version, as in echo, 25LS1198/E. It's an act repealing the Alaska Children's Trust, establishing conditions for a grant of the balance of the Alaska Children's Trust, designating certain receipts as available for grants to the Alaska Community Foundation, and providing for an effective date. The Alaska Children's Trust is one of 52 trusts in the United States created by state statute, territory, or District of Columbia to prevent child abuse and neglect. The Alaska Children's Trust is the second largest endowment at about $12 million. Over 40 of the trusts have no endowment at all, but are dependent upon annual state allocation and dedicated fund streams, federal monies, and private funding. Like many states, ACT, that's Alaska Children's Trust, receives funds from special request Children's Trust license plates, receipt for birth certificates suitable for display, and heirloom certificates of marriage. 28 states also receive federal community-based child abuse prevention program funds. These funds are based on child population and child abuse and neglect reports. Alaska's annual allotment is about $235,000 and is matched at 20% by the Office of Children's Services and distributed to tribes. OCS grantees in 2007 receiving those funds served 356 families. Senate Bill 206 was introduced to privatize or have a donor-advised fund with Alaska Community Foundation in response to concerns by the Board of Trustees of ACT that the state had not provided consistent staffing, that investment policies did not produce desired results to increase grant-making, that administration produced a lack of small grassroots grant applicants, that the trust would be subject to the vagaries and whims of changing political leadership, and realization that the tension between treatment and prevention is inescapable in a state setting where the trust is focused on prevention. As a result, the board commissioned The Giving Practice, a consulting service of philanthropy northwest of Seattle, to provide an independent report with various ways to solve persistent problems. The lengthy report of March 17, 2006 should be in your package at 69 pages, but it describes a number of options. One, eliminate the trust activities and turn the funds over to the state. Two, stay with the state, but with negotiated operational and state changes. Three, donor advised fund, which is presently what has been described with the Alaska Community Foundation. Four, use the 4-acre group as fiscal operational sponsor. Five, merge with Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust. Or six, become a new independent 501c3 public charity. The board voted to privatize the trust. It has had a donor-advised fund with the Alaska Community Foundation. The result is this Senate Bill 206. Although the consultant's report pointed out that the Community Foundation and Friends of the Alaska Community Trust may offer little more than a shell structure with limited organizational capacity and more administrative and fund management expenses, the board felt a substantial change was needed. You'll note that many of the things I just described are in the report. They're summarized in 1 through 8 on page 2 of the sponsor statement. And it does indicate, in addition to what I've already described in number 7, for example, that the limited dollars available for annual grant making, currently the portion of the interest income from the trust released by the Department of Revenue, is relatively small, about $348,000, and limited by statute to a maximum amount. The board felt this impaired the trust's ability to leverage its small annual budget to assist efforts in the state to prevent child abuse and neglect. The board also felt that while current staffing by the Office of Children's Services was useful and the full of information, it unavoidably tended to change the goal and priority of ACT from prevention to treatment of those children already suffering from abuse and neglect. Although Alaska statute allows for the appropriation of up to $150,000 from the principal of the trust annually for operating expenses. It has not been the practice of the trust. The ACT income available for spending in 2004 was $340,689. A little more than that, $364 in 2005 per page 14 of the March 17th, 06 consulting report. The page 15 of that report that you have before you is more telling in showing the surpluses of unspent grant money available in the year in those years, of $42,000 and $82,000 respectively. This seeming anomaly to have a surplus may be explained by the dramatic drop in administrative expenses from $117,000 to $85,000 to $9,500 to $31,000 in 2005. This tends to indicate that staffing became part-time during this period, while inadequate disbursements resulted in surpluses. Contrary to the board's initial contention, the report found actual management expenses charged by the Department of Revenue remained consistently low at about $35,000 or 0.3% of the $12 million corpus. Management fees for Alaska Community Foundation were estimated at about 0.84% of 1%, a little more than twice as much. But the anticipated benefits may offset the costs. In summary, the Board of Alaska Children's Trust has concluded that something needs to be done to improve the performance of ACT to help accomplish its mission of prevention and abuse and neglect of children. In moving from department to department, employees of ACT have not had the benefit of institutional memory in managing this large endowment. The Department of Revenue, while it charges very little for its services, may consider the investment of the corpus of ACT a very small part of its operation, not requiring a great deal of its attention. Privatizing ACT through Senate Bill 206 is a viable and perhaps preferred option unless, as suggested by the consulting group in its final recommendations in your package, the state could satisfactorily address the concerns without change in structure.
Okay. You've heard the briefing on the sponsor statement there. We have quite a few people signed up to speak to this bill. And we also have legal online because she has a lot of questions or concerns, and you probably will also. I don't know if you want to go further on that or just go take the public testimony and then get to your questions later. Would that be okay?
Fine with me.
Okay. We do have quite a few people online and off-net. I will try to get to the off-net people by calling from that list first. Diane Kaplan? Kaplan?
Yes.
Did you plan to testify? Were you just on for questions or what?
No, I'm happy to testify.
All right, you may testify at this time.
Okay, Madam Chair. My name is Diane Kaplan. I serve as a trustee on the Alaska Children's Trust. I actually began my service with the Children's Trust as an appointee of Governor Knowles to the Friends of the Children's Trust, which was formed at approximately the same time as the Children's Trust. The purpose of the Friends is to raise money for and do marketing around the Children's Trust. It does things like the license plates and marriage certificates that you might be familiar with, as well as the Mush for Kids in Fairbanks, and in the past, the Cruise for Kids and other fundraising activities to build the trust. I was subsequently, after about 5 years of service on the FAC, appointed to the Alaska Children's Trust, and I'm in my second term on the trust. The commission is unanimous in its belief that this trust would function much better outside of state government. As you saw, the consultant report recommended it would be optimum to stay with the state if accommodations could be made. We spent 2 years with the state trying to do that because originally we thought there was a great deal of benefit at the remaining part of the state. And we do have the commissioners of education and health and social services are two of the seven statutory members of the trust, and even with that support, it was concluded unanimously by the seven trustees that through no fault of anyone, this relationship was not working and that the trust was unable to fulfill its mission in terms of making a meaningful impact and providing leadership on child abuse prevention. With another hat as head of the Rasmussen Foundation, I can tell you, in terms of raising money, it is very difficult to get donors to write a check to the state of Alaska or to a municipality or any public body. And therefore, many institutions use the Alaska Community Foundation as a way to build public support for public activities. As an example, the Eagle River Clock Tower Project was something initiated by the Chamber of Commerce and the Community Council in Eagle River. A fund was created at the Alaska Community Foundation, and that allowed individuals to write tax-benefited donations to support that project. Similarly, the West High Auditorium set up a fund, and so that individuals didn't have to deal with bureaucracy at the Anchorage School District, which was not set up to serve as donors. Similarly, the Jesse Lee Home, the Anchorage Parks Foundation, the Anchorage Library Foundation all work through the Community Foundation to be able to combine public and private funds for the good of Alaska. So I see this as a very timely step, and we thank Senator Davis for taking the leadership to bring this forward.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions of Diane Kaplan? No, if no questions, there's another person that's off net by the name of Sammy. And I'm not able to pronounce your last name.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Would you state your name for the record, please? Would you state your name for the record?
Sammy Polkriski.
Did you plan to testify?
I am here for questions. I'm a member of the board of directors of the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust, and yes, I'm happy to answer any questions that might be directed to the Friends organization.
All right. I don't think we have any questions at this time, then.
I just would like to know how she spells her last name.
Oh, is it P-O-K-I-R-F-T-I?
It's P-O-K-R-Y-F-K-I. And, Madam Chair, I'd also like to say that the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust are in unanimous support of this legislation as well, and we appreciate your leadership on this.
All right, thank you. We'll go to some of the people that's on. Is there Stacy Cray there? Oh, that's from Department of Law. They're here to answer questions probably. Is that Tricia Narcutt?
Madam Chair, my name is Tricia Narcutt. I am a member for the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust. I am a media past chair of this organization and have served as a board member for 8 years. And I would like to testify today on this bill from a fundraising perspective. As Diane Kaplan stated earlier, one of the challenges for fundraising for this very worthy cause is asking donors to give money to a state entity. Though the Friends were set up as a 501c3 to raise money on behalf of the trust, we, by virtue of ethics, have to let people know that the money that is raised does go into the state. As a member of the Association of Fundraising Professionals, I subscribe to a code of ethics. And in that code of ethics, it is my requirement that I cannot ethically take donor dollars if I cannot guarantee that I can follow donor intent. By putting this money into the state of Alaska, I lose my authority to remain that I can guarantee that donor intent. Therefore, we have had some very faithful corporate sponsors by going out and asking the community and new sponsors for fundraising efforts on behalf of the Alaska Children's Trust has been very difficult. I firmly believe that placing this money into the Alaska Community Foundation is the best route for our cause, and I appreciate your leadership in putting this bill forward, and I will answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Is there any questions? Here are no questions. At this time, I'll call on Iris Matthews.
Madam Chair, this is Iris Matthews of the Alaska Community Foundation. I'm just
Would you pull your microphone up closer to your...
Is that better? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I do hear you.
Okay, great. I'm just here to answer any questions the committee may have about the Alaska Community Foundation, but don't have any testimony to offer.
And what is your role in, are you on the board?
I'm a program officer with the Alaska Community Foundation. Okay. Our chief executive officer was out of the office this week.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there Carly Lawrence there?
Yes, this is Carly Lawrence. I am chair of the Friends of Alaska Children's Trust.
Did you plan to testify?
I did plan on testifying. However, I'd just like to ditto what Talitha Northcutt has already testified to of the ethical issues that we have of fundraising for the Alaska Children's Trust Fund.
All right. Thank you. Candace Winkler?
This is Candace Winkler, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Child Care Connection, and I'm here to testify in support of privatizing the Alaska Children's Trust from a grantee perspective. My organization, Child Care Connection, has been the recipient of a small grant from the Alaska Children's Trust for the past 3 years to provide parenting classes and other supports to families. And as a grantee, we've been extremely appreciative of the resources from the trust, but have to admit that the process has been very laborious. We actually, as an organization, have quite a few other grants with the state, one that we've had for about 15 years that's over $1 million. And I would say that this grant that has been between, you know, $50,000 and now this year I think it's only about $15,000, has been probably the most laborious grant that we have had to deal with the state. The first year that we received the grant, it was supposed to be in effect for July, and I think we didn't hear anything back until maybe August or September. First we heard back that we got the grant, then we heard back that the amount was reduced about a month later. The money was increased back up to our original proposal, and so by the time, you know, all of the kind of ups and downs of the process were worked out, we were probably into about October, so we were about more than a quarter of a way through the fiscal year for that particular grant. So that's just kind of one example of what we as a grantee have sort of dealt with, and I'm not really sure if it's that the administration of these grants is split between the Alaska Children's Trust staff and state staff, or because the amount is so small that it's not given priorities among grants and contracts at the state. But I know that we have considered, kind of every year we sort of consider, is it worth going for the money? Because, you know, as a small grant that takes a lot of administrative time, you know, you often have to weigh that out. And my organization probably has more capacity to deal with some of that than some smaller entities who may actually opt just not to apply. I know we work with a variety of early care and education programs around South Central Alaska, and several of them have considered at times going for Children's Trust grants and have sort of made the determination that the application process was too much for them. So I think that privatizing and simplifying the process will increase the number of applicants that the trust has. I think it will help the trust to be more efficient in both their staff and board time. And as a couple of other folks have mentioned, I do think it will have the added bonus of enabling them to leverage more resources to get out to community partner agencies in an effort to reduce child abuse and neglect in Alaska. So in closing, I strongly urge you to support privatizing the Alaska Children's Trust. I think it's a win-win for all parties. I think the trust will be able, again, to attract a broader array of grantees and hopefully some from smaller rural communities that I know have considered applying.
applying for some grants. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I hear no question. We'll go to the next person. We're going to come to Juno now. And I can't make out what the first name is, but Lucy, are you here?
Yes, Panu.
Yes, Panu?
Yes.
And how do you spell that? P-A-N-U?
Yes, P-A-N-U.
Okay.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you and HESC committee members, and thank you for sponsoring Senate Bill 206 and Senate Bill 210. My name is Panu Lucier. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Children's Trust and the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust. I serve both boards. I am new to this position, having just come on board in December. So I've been learning a lot about what the trust does and a lot about the state granting process. It's very different than managing federal grants. And I also, just to reiterate, it's a pretty cumbersome process for grantees to go through the state RFP process and to manage the state grants through the state system. As you've heard, the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust is a 501c3 nonprofit arm of the Alaska Children's Trust whose mission is to raise funds for the Alaska Children's Trust and to provide outreach and marketing for the act and to raise awareness of child abuse and neglect. As a nonprofit, FAC accepts contributions from individuals, corporations, or foundations that are restricted to nonprofit contributions or granting or are seeking a tax deduction. Fundraising is becoming increasingly difficult under the current structure of the Alaska Children's Trust. Because the Act Fund is a state fund and subject to legislative appropriation, donors are increasingly reluctant to contribute to a fund which cannot guarantee that the donor's intent will be followed. Donors do not want to give to a pass-through organization. Funds raised by the FACT and contributed to the Alaska Children's Trust go into the corpus of the Alaska Children's Trust Fund and cannot be used for programming. The Alaska Children's Trust is restricted to granting from just the net earnings of the fund. FACT is restricted from making direct grants by all of its organizational documents. The FACT board members struggle with the ethical implications of raising money that may or may not be used as donors intend. Safeguarding the funds takes energy that could be better utilized on the mission of related activities. With the privatization of the Alaska Children's Trust, the FACT and ACT propose to merge into one nonprofit organization that will take on the functions of marketing, outreach, grant making, and fundraising. This allows for ethical fundraising. It ensures the long-term stability of the funds. It allows for a more efficient process for grantees. It allows for fund management in an endowment model and ensures a more efficient operations. The Office of Children's Services statistics for March 2008 indicate that over 2,000 children are in out-of-home care. 61% of these children are Alaska Native or American Indian. These numbers hit very close to home since I myself am Alaska Native and have been a volunteer court-appointed special advocate for the past 8 years. And I have worked specifically with Alaska Native children who are in state custody. No one organization can fix this problem of child abuse and neglect. It will take a cooperative effort of state and private entities, and most importantly, individuals living in communities must take ownership of the problem of child abuse and neglect. The state has taken responsibility of providing services to children already suffering from childhood abuse and neglect. ACT is currently charged through state statutes to conduct activities which result in the prevention of child abuse and neglect through the issuance of community-based grants. There are several limitations in current statute that prohibit the Act from maximizing its ability to eliminate child abuse and neglect. The current board composition, now 7 members appointed by the governor, is too small to meet the needs for expertise of leading a more diverse set of activities. Current restrictions on length and percentage of grant funding do not allow flexibility needed to make the most efficient use of the trust and other donor dollars. While the Act is permitted to seek outside funds to add to the trust fund, it does not appear to have the authority to negotiate with those donors as to how those funds can be used. The current administrative structure of the trust within the state is too burdensome, given its small operating budget and small size of grant awards being offered. Small community-based organizations that are well poised to offer community-based solutions are unlikely to apply under the current process because of the administrative burden relative to the small size of the grant awards. Grants awards are limited to $50,000. This sentiment has been expressed to trustees and staff on multiple occasions. A more streamlined and simplified administrative structure would enhance the Alaska Children's Trust's ability to efficiently and effectively pursue its mission. Privatizing the trust would expand the role of the trust from just grant making to including research, convening, collaborating, outreach, and social marketing. This will enhance the trust's ability to focus grants in program areas that are the highest need and show the greatest promise for success, and will allow the trust to share this information through outreach and social marketing to all Alaskans, not just those served by funded programs. Privatization would also allow use of trust funds, including the revenue sources from the sale of the license plates, marriage and birth certificates, as well as other funds secured by the trust, which include federal earmarks, foundation grants, or corporate donations, to conduct expanded activities as identified above. Most of all, privatization through Senate Bill 206 and 210 would help create a more unified voice to focus on the mission of ending child abuse and neglect in Alaska. The trustees of the Alaska Children's Trust, with the support of the Friends of the Alaska Children's Trust, recommend to the governor and the Alaska legislature that the Alaska Children's Trust be privatized. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there Jenna Apps? ASP?
APP.
APP? Okay.
Madam Chair, there's no need for me to testify
today. All right, thank you. You chose not to? Okay, thanks. I don't think I have anyone else signed up to speak. Is there anyone in the audience that I don't have the name of that want to speak to this bill? Anyone online that didn't speak want to speak to this bill? And to the committee, we only have this room for another 5 or 6 minutes here, a little bit more than that. You can begin to discuss the bill, but we do have to get out of here in a short time. It was no intention to do anything but take public testimony and hear some of the concerns. I know that we do have Jean Michelle online. She's to answer questions. She might want to share some of her thoughts about this bill. If you would like to hear them, we could do that. Yes.
Madam Chair, if she wants to, I wonder if we could get the Department of Revenue to come up and give their perspective on how this might work.
Yes.
To the Chair, for the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Director of Administrative Services, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Revenue, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about how we manage the funds now and how this might change that.
Yes, ma'am.
Do we do this with other state receipts? I'm trying to think of a comparable program that we're doing this with, and I haven't come up with anything, but you may.
To the Chair, Senator Elton, there are other, the current process here is we invest the money, it's approximately $12 million today, and we pay the income to an income account, which can be spent. We retain the principal, and we end up charging this about 0.3%, about $40,000 a year against that $12 million. There are other accounts in state government which are set up for specific purposes, you know, whether it be hazardous spill response fund or something like that, which are managed in a similar fashion, separated and managed. But you know, in terms of, I'm not sure if I understand the rest of your question here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. I guess I'm thinking of the trust dollars going into a bucket, and I guess I'm trying to get to what the process would be. You manage the trust dollars now. You report report what the receipts are, and then who makes the decision on the disposition of those receipts?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, currently, you know, for the income account, it's the Children's Trust Board that's doing that, and it's our understanding what would happen with the passage of this bill. This would go away. The money would be appropriated in another bill to the nonprofit organization, who would then handle it, and then who in the future would receive receipts that otherwise were going into that trust. We have really no opinion on whether that's a good idea, a bad idea, or anything else. This represents 0.05% of the money that we manage in Treasury, okay. And, approximately.
And so, Madam Chair, just one more question. So, the department would then make available to the legislature, this is the amount of money that is available. Does the whole account go to?
The chair, that would, or Senator Elton, that would depend on how the appropriation bill was done. But we would be identifying the amount, the available balance on the date of the dissolution of the fund, and that would be available for appropriation, okay, for whatever purpose the legislature chose.
Okay.
At that point.
And then in the future, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. The receipts come from the license plates or the heirloom certificates would be collected by the Department of Health and Social Services. Right. The Department of Health and Social Services would then tell the legislature how much money had been collected by those, and those receipts could be transferred in a grant to the privatized trust.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, typically with a program like that, there's a language section in the budget that says the amount available from the sale of these items or from this source is appropriated to.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Before you go, but at this time when money comes in, it comes into revenue? That is all for the license plates, the certificates.
That's correct. And it's accounted for in the trust.
In the trust. And every year they have a certain amount of money. Say the $150,000 is for them to give out grants. Does it then get transferred over to Department of Health and Social Services at this time?
Senator Davis, at this point, $150,000 can be spent from the principal each year for administering the program. The rest of it, which is the income, which averaged 7% over the since inception of the fund, a little over 7% of what was in the fund, has been available for grants. It's the income that's available for grants,
okay,
and then the $150,000 is available for administering the program.
And that's not the part that is not used is turned over to?
It goes back into the trust.
Into the trust.
Or stays in the income account of the trust, actually, the amount. If it's part of the $150,000, it stays in the principal of the trust. If it's part of the income, it stays in the income account and is available to use for grants. One of the issues with this, other than problems with fundraising, which have been identified, is that the fund is managed so that only income, realized income, is available. So that means that the variation in income year to year is quite large. You could have several years where there could be no income and another year where there's a great deal of income. If you choose to leave it with the state and leave this money in the Department of Revenue in the trust, I would strongly recommend that you change this to an endowment management, so that there is an even amount of money available for grants in each year.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I still don't quite understand exactly how the grants are is the check written by your department for the grantees?
No, it's not. It's written by the trust. It goes and it's available to the trust to use.
So whatever is available to them, go to them, and then they
right
in turn write the checks.
And if they don't
once
spend the
they've
money,
been approved by Department of Health and Social Services,
right? However their board function works.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else want to testify on this bill? Jean Michelle, are you there?
Madam Chair, I'm here.
Did you want to speak to this bill? Did you have something that you wanted to share about the bill? Or just we're here for questions?
Senator Davis, I have some concerns about the way the bill is structured. And I did the drafting based upon a specific request, but there are some legal issues that I think create unnecessary confusion in the bill, and one of those is that we continue to refer in the license and heirloom certificate sections to the existence of an Alaska Children's Trust Fund that is actually repealed on the left page of the bill, and I'm referring to version E.
Yes.
So there is no Alaska Children's Trust if we repeal it, so that should be changed, that reference. I'm not sure as a legal matter whether we can transfer monies that were donated under one set of understanding, in this case that the money was being handled by a state trust board and being collected for that purpose, and transfer that to a private organization. I think that's there. I've had some discussions with other attorneys on that question, and some attorneys believe that that's okay because there's the same basic public purpose attached to the money, but I think that creates some potential to challenge the transfer. The other question is whether the state can continue to collect license fees and heirloom certificate fees and hand it over to a private entity. The bill authorizes the legislature to do that, doesn't require it, otherwise we'd have a dedicated fund problem. So I'm a little bit less concerned about that, but it does raise a specific question about whether those license fees and heirloom certificate monies could be construed as a tax, in which case we're constrained by what we can do with that money. I'm also concerned about actually labeling the Alaska Community Foundation in statute as the named recipient grantee. The state lacks control over the existence of that foundation, and other than to constrain the foundation's use of the money through a grant agreement, which this bill anticipates, there's nothing that actually the state can do to require the maintenance of that organization. So I'd recommend that you refrain from actually identifying a specified community foundation in the substantive provisions of the law. There's no problem with doing that in the appropriation bill, but I'm uncomfortable leaving in a private entity in the substantive sections that are in this bill.
And I think you did draft the one time leaving that out, not specifying that.
Right.
And the reason it's in there now is because we took what the trust had given as the things they wanted to have changed, and then you drafted a different bill, putting the Children's Trust, I mean the name of the foundation in here.
Madam Madam Chair, I did what I was told to do.
Right. I understand what you're saying. I know that was given to you. But I was thinking more or less that you probably would point out if that wasn't going to work. We did do what they wanted because we gave that directly to you and you drafted the bill. I hear what you're saying. And maybe we need to get some clarification from the AG's office or someone else to address the bill when we really get down to it, because I guess there are more concerns than they are satisfaction of what we're doing in this particular piece of the bill at this point. And if there's no one else to discuss this bill and no other questions to come, we do have to vacate this room at this time. If you have questions that you want to get to me, and I mean the committee members, be sure to do that, because we're going to be trying to work on the bill and make changes in the bill that you have in front of you now. And with that, we'll just adjourn at this time.